Do you worry about your privacy on the internet? Do you ever think about how much someone could find out about you if they wanted to? Have you ever wondered if your life could be destroyed over the internet by a stranger?
The internet helps you stay connected, you know that, but a lot of people think about how to protect themselves online.
Yeah, they really don't think about it. So KVU's Leslie Adamy joins us in studio with how one group really wants to make that a lot easier for you.
Hey, good morning, guys. You know, from pictures to apps like Snapchat, Instagram, or Twitter, our phones really tell a lot about us. And when you're checking into a location on Facebook, you may not always be thinking of who else is checking in on you. According to the U.S. Office of Women's Health, 1 in 6 women experience stalking, and 1 in 4 stalking victims report it as cyber stalking. Now, that can mean receiving threatening messages or emails, being harassed on social media, or someone tracking your location.
You have to be careful about the realms that you go into, what you post, just like it is in daily life. People seem to be more free and unfettered when they're online because they're not face-to-face with someone.
Monica was happy. She was a successful real estate agent. She used social media to connect with friends and family and clients, just like everyone else does. But one day, without realizing it, she made a mistake, and she had no idea what was about to happen. Real people in unreal situations.
There is a man standing in front of me in my bedroom.
My friend has been shot.
I'm literally inside the river, and I'm inside my car.
He had told me multiple times that he was going to set himself on fire.
If you say my name or try to look at me, I'm going to kill you.
And he was just sobbing. He said, Mom, Mom, tell me you're going to be okay.
And I jumped on the hood of the car, and I held on.
And I looked into the garage, and he was hanging from the rafters.
I had somebody standing on my neck.
He's better to me dead. I want him dead.
I'm Scott Johnson, and this is What Was That Like? Hey, it's Scott, and guess what? You're about to hear an ad. And that's both good and bad. It's good because ads are what make it possible for me to keep bringing you these episodes. And it's bad because, well, maybe you don't like listening to ads, and I get that. And the good news is, you don't have to. When you sign up to support the show, you get every single episode without any ads. Plus, you get all the bonus episodes. Yeah, did you know there are actually bonus episodes? And you can try it all for free just to see what it's like. If you're on an iPhone, just go to the What Was That Like podcast, and at the top, click on Try Free, and you're in. On Android, just go to whatwasthatlike.com/plus and try it out completely free. Once you've had the ad-free experience, you'll see why hundreds of other listeners are already doing it. But for now, here's another ad, and then on with today's episode.
Ah. The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car-selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of The Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Does real estate training include guidance on how to use social media?
You know, I think, well, first of all, when I first got started in real estate, 1999, so it's been a while, you know, we didn't have social media. But, you know, I think even as of today, you know, the training we provided in regards to social media, it's mostly how to drive traffic to your social media. You know, it doesn't, I think maybe more in the last couple of years, we have had some training, very little, not official training, that shows you the dangers of social media. I think everybody who is on social media today, kind of, it's almost self-explanatory. You got to be careful. But no, I don't think we have any official training about dangers of social media, only how to sell on social media.
Well, yeah, that, it seems like that would make sense. Like for the most part, anyway, you know, they want you to know how to use social media to benefit your business,
correct?
But not necessarily the dangers of it. But for sure, your story sure illustrates the dangers of it.
That's true.
Sure.
I have tried to give some classes on that since all of this happened. At least in my office, you know, so they were very open to it. But that's about the extent of it.
Can you just describe your life before? You know, like up until this happened, what was life like for you and where did you live?
Yeah, so I'm originally actually from Poland. You know, I was born and raised and I came here when I was, well, just about 19 years old after high school. And, you know, I met my husband in 1990, and it was a quick romance, and we got married actually about 8 months later. So, you know, we have two children, and my husband was in the military. So, you know, we traveled all over, and just a very much, you know, two and a half kids, you know, a dog, you know, mom and dad family, very average family, but we're very happy. You know, a lot of laughter and a lot of adventures. You know, we call ourselves Four Musketeers. And we do that because, you know, when you're a military family, you only have each other. So you kind of, you leave places wherever you make friends and you move to a new place and you have to start over trying to build new friendships. So really who you have is just what who we had was the four of us, you know, so four musketeers. That's what we call ourselves. So our children at this point have left home like 9 years ago. So we've been empty nesters for that long. Our marriage, I would say it's, you know, we just celebrated 30 years. So we're still together and we're happy. I mean, just like any marriage, look, you know, there's no such a thing as a perfect marriage. Perfect marriage just means, you know, you go through your ups and downs and you work through it. And, you know, we still love each other and our kids still talk to us. So that's a good thing, you know, so very happy family. We're very kind of calm and happy within our little world that we had. I've been in real estate since 1999. We moved to where I live right now. It will be almost 16 years. So I've been with Remax, I think, for the last 6 years. Yeah, just different company before that. But that's been my career for, you know, for 20 years now. So
everything's good. Everybody's happy. Great family. Life is good. And then one day you got a surprise.
Yeah, you know, that's right. So, you know, that year was kind of, you know, and I think back now, it was just such a different year. So, you know, that year we celebrated 25th wedding anniversary, and it was in August. We decided to do a huge party because when we got married in 1990, we were so poor that we couldn't even afford to do 20 people party. Forget, you know, 100 people. Like real wedding, couldn't afford to get a nice wedding dress. So we actually got married kind of in the back chapel of the church, just with mom and dad, you know, with moms and a couple witnesses. Just like any other little girl, you dream of having a big dress and walk down the aisle and do the whole thing and have be surrounded by family and friends. So that year, we thought, why not? Why not do the dress? Why not walk down the aisle? Why not go ahead and renew our vows? And our children were at this point adults. So they're our witnesses. So we had this huge party and this was in August. And then we did the honeymoon, which we never did. So it was just, we were kind of like right at the top. I mean, that was our high for the year. You know, we ended up going on a trip to Peru and checking off one of those things from your bucket list of going visiting Machu Picchu, right? And you always wanted to do it. So we did that, came home, and we just got back to our normal lives. And one of the mornings, and at that point, we're talking beginning of September, you know, I was sleeping and my phone started going off really early in the morning. It's like 6 o'clock in the morning. And I'm a realtor. We stay up really late and we work really late and we can actually answer people middle of the night. But when it comes to morning, we're just not morning people. And I'm definitely not a morning person. So kind of silenced my phone and it just kept going off and off and off. And I thought, well, something's going on. So I looked at it and it was my broker. And I'm like, oh my goodness, what could she possibly have to say to me at 6 o'clock in the morning? I pick up the phone and I said, what is it? You know, why you're calling me so early? And she goes, you have to see what has been posted on our local Facebook page. You know, you have to see the links and what's going on. And I'm like, okay, what is it? She says, look, it's really, really bad. I'm like, okay. I said, did somebody give me a bad review or did somebody say something bad about me? I mean, you know, so many years in real estate, I mean, eventually I was going to get a bad review and I'm not a perfect person. You know, I'm flawed just like everybody else. And she says, no, I don't think you don't understand. So she says, I'm going to send you the screenshots. Take a look at it. So I hung up the phone and she starts sending the screenshots and I start reading. And I have to tell you, as I'm reading it, I'm actually kind of not grasping what I'm reading. It's some kind of link, some story about me on this website called She's a Homewrecker. And it has my picture on it. And I right away, you know, I started reading what this person wrote. A person's name was like Ryan Baxter or something like that. Obviously a fake persona. So I right away jumped out of bed and I went, opened up my computer and I told her, I said, did you leave this on Facebook? She says, no, we deleted, but we screenshot just so you see what's going on. You need to take care of it. So I opened up my computer. I right away went to that link and she actually copied the link for me. So I went, opened it up and I started reading the story. And as the story goes, it was just really elaborate story, long, you know.
You were reading this on this website called She's a Homewrecker.
She's a Homewrecker.com.
Can you describe what is that website? What's it about?
Well, now that I know what this is about, you know, back then I was just shocked because I never thought that side of internet existed. I mean, I might be naive, but I didn't know. The website is basically a slut shaming website. You know, they make money from basically having people post stories about other people. It doesn't matter really if it's true or not. You know, there's my understanding now is you just click the little checkbox and it says, hey, you definitely saying this story is true. And this way, they're not responsible for it, right? So it's a slut shaming. It's mostly women shaming. They actually have the whole thing is organized per state, per country. It's just per city in that state. And there's tens of thousands of people on that website. And at that point, I became that unfortunate member.
Like there's a category of websites called revenge sites.
Right.
And it sounds like it's one of them, like a woman whose husband has an affair goes on this website and tells all about the woman that he supposedly had an affair with.
Correct.
That's
exactly the kind of website that is. You know, the story that they wrote about me, well, obviously, let's just go ahead and get this out of the way. It's not true. But she wrote the story about how supposedly she was a client of mine. She retained me and, you know, we're looking at houses. I showed her some, you know, eight to 10 houses. She loved the job I was doing for her. You know, one of the days she said she couldn't make it to the appointment we made to take a look at a house. So instead of her going with me herself, she sends her husband with me. So I go and meet her husband. And, you know, while we're looking at the house, whatever appointment she had ended up canceling. So she's like, well, I'm just going to jump in the car and I'm going to drive out there and meet them both. So she tells the story. She pulls up in the front of the house and she sees my car, his car. She walks into the house, looks at everything. She's loving it. She can't find us. So she goes upstairs and she walks in on me and her husband having sex on the floor, as she put it, on the plush white carpet, which right away to me, it's a red flag. I mean, who in the world has white plush carpet in our area with red clay? You know, first red flag, right?
That is so funny that as a realtor, that's the part of the story that you
know. Yeah, I'm reading it like, what house did I show with white carpet? You know, and because your mind really does tricks on you. You're reading it and you know it's not true. And you're like, did I forget something? It's just weird how your mind gets twisted. And but in any case, to continue the story, she said that we're butt naked. It gets really graphic, the story she writes. But in any case, she said that she right away pulled out her phone. She took pictures of us as we both scrambled to get dressed. She wrote some stuff about how he ejaculated on me and just really awful stuff. And then at the end of it, she says that ever since then, she has gotten divorced. And that she, due to the picture she took, she got everything in a divorce, and that she wants to warn all the women out there. And she says, do not use this woman as a realtor. She's enemy of all decent women out there. And there was my picture and all my contact information. And I have to tell you, when I got down to it, I know there are people out there that have gone into shock. But it's a funny thing that happens. It's like the room gets really small and you feel your hearing, it kind of starts buzzing in your ears and your hearing, you feel like you're underwater. It's a weird reaction that your body does. And I was completely in shock. And not only was I shocked that, first of all, the story was false, I just couldn't understand why anybody would write that. It's weird how you're ashamed of something that you know you didn't do, but all these feelings right away go through your mind. It just, your mind starts racing 1,000 miles and you know, an hour. So I jumped up and woke up my husband. I said, you have got to come here and take a look at this. You have to look at this. So he comes out. And he reads it and, you know, he's mad right away. I mean, he just lost his mind. He's like, whoever that is, I'm going to kill him. I'm just going to kill him. So, but I thought, well, you know, it's really early in the morning. Most people are still sleeping. They probably haven't seen it. How naive is that, right? So I always thought that if something is not true, and I know a lot of your listeners will probably roll their eyes, but maybe I am that naive, but I thought something's not true. And I'm going to write to that website. I'm going to call them up, although there's no phone number. And I know that now, but I'm going to message them. And if it's not true, they must take this down, right? Well, I had no clue that those websites are protected. So the day I right away contacted an attorney, I said, I think what I need is like a cease and desist letter, something. So I called an attorney. They generated that letter. I went ahead and sent it over to the website. Nothing. I contacted them on Facebook. Nothing. In the meantime, it's during the day. People start finding out. My kids and a couple of my friends, because I was crying. I mean, I don't know. I don't think I stopped crying for a whole week, at least at first. And I realized by the end of that day that there is nothing I can do by myself. And I was completely lost. I didn't know how I'm going to take care of it. In the meantime, what was happening is, as I, for the first time, plugged in my name into the Google, I noticed that there were pages and pages of Google results, you know, search engine results that showed this story. about me, and it was syndicated to all different websites. So even if I, for example, took care of this one website, it has already spinned off to different stories by different similar websites. And it was like a wildfire. There was no way for me to somehow fix this.
That's what really gets me about this, that when you were first hit with this, maybe not even the first few minutes, but the first few hours or that day or two, because it wasn't just posted on the RE/MAX Facebook page. They also sent it to your family and your friends and your professional contacts. So it wasn't a secret at all. Everybody knew about it.
But
I got to think in your head, where do you even start in trying to fix this? Obviously you want to get it removed, but do you try to contact everyone and explain it? Or do you want to find out who actually posted this thing? How do you decide what to do first?
So my first thing was, and very early in the morning, I didn't know that this person actually sent it. First of all, I had no clue that my Facebook was open. We call open now, right? So that person had access to my friend list. So they sent it basically to everybody. So by the time people start waking up, I start getting this wave of messages from people saying, what is this? Of course, my daughter got it. My son got it. They were completely petrified. It's like, Mom, what is this? So yes, I was answering, but most of my closest friends, they were all like, who the hell is this person and how do I kill him? because they know us. And I don't mean it really kill him, but it's that they were all very upset. But where do I start? So I think my first thought was go to the source. Where did that story come from? And it was on the shehishomewrecker.com. So I thought if I get rid of that story, then I can start kind of putting out fires wherever that went. I didn't know how huge this was going to be. And it took me just a couple of days to realize this is not going to go away. It's not going to go away. And I won't be able to stop it from continuing to syndicate to other websites.
Right. I read that on one of those other websites called Bad Biz Report.
Oh, yeah.
It had already gotten viewed like 95,000 times.
It did.
So obviously it was a popular post on that site. And obviously, when somebody's looking around, maybe trying to choose a real estate agent, I guess one of the first things people would do is just type your name in Google, maybe get some testimonials. And
that's exactly right.
Boy, it was not the testimonial you wanted to get coming up in Google then.
That's exactly right. And as a matter of fact, within a week, if you typed in my name into the Google, what you got, or any search engine, what you got was about 3 pages only of that story. There was nothing else. I mean, you could go, but who goes to the 4th page of search results, right? Nobody does. And especially if a story like this pops up, a customer, a client right away goes, well, okay, I'm not going to go in any further. I just saw what this woman is all about.
I made a decision a long time ago. When I'm out riding my bike each morning and I cross paths with someone, I always smile at that person. And most people smile back. But I do it because even though it's a little thing, it makes a big difference for me and maybe for them. It's just a fact. Small actions can bring big benefits. In the same way, it's also true that taking care of your gut can support the health of the rest of your body. Seed's DSO1 Daily Symbiotic benefits not just your gut, but your skin and heart health too. Seed DSO1 is part of my morning routine. If you can call it a routine, it's just 2 little capsules. And I feel amazing. It helps maintain the health of my heart, and it promotes regularity, which I can attest to. Sorry, that may be a little TMI there. For me, it's great that it's vegan, but it's also sugar-free, soy-free, peanut-free, gluten-free, and has no preservatives. It doesn't even need refrigeration. DSO1 has so many benefits, including the fact that it's backed by a lot of science, but I've barely scratched the surface here. What I can say, though, is that my body feels great, and I've got a promo code so you can see the benefits for yourself.
Trust your gut with Seed's DSO1 Daily Symbiotic. Go to seed.com/what and use code 25what to get 25% off your first month. That's 25% off your first month of Seed's DSO1 Daily Symbiotic at seed.com/what. Code 25what.
This episode is sponsored by Cook Unity. Go to cookunity.com/what or enter code WHAT before checkout for 50% off your first week. When Jeannie and I go out to eat at some local restaurant, one of the things I love to try is a curry dish. I just love it when a chef can get that perfect balance of spices. It's one of my favorite meals. But even better is to have an amazing curry meal without having to go out, like the one I had recently. It was cauliflower and chickpea coconut curry with steamed jasmine rice. And even though it was created by a professional local chef here in Florida, we enjoyed that meal right here at home, thanks to Cook Unity. And you know what else I love? All the prep and cooking is done for me ahead of time. So all I do is just choose the one I want, and 2 minutes later, I'm enjoying a tasty hot meal. It feels like I'm one of those wealthy podcasters with a chef on staff right here at home. Cook Unity meals arrive fresh. They've never been frozen. All of their packaging is earth-friendly, and it's cheaper than other delivery options. Oh, and you have to try that coconut curry.
Experience chef-quality meals every week delivered right to your door. Go to cookunity.com/what or enter code WHAT before checkout for 50% off your first week. That's 50% off your first week by using code WHAT or going to cookunity.com/what.
Here's my hot take for today. If you see something advertised as a free trial, it might cost you more than you expect. At least that's my experience. I give up my credit card to try something for free for a week, then I forget about it, and now I'm paying for it every month without even noticing it. But when I signed up for Rocket Money, that ridiculous waste came to a screeching halt. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions. It monitors your spending, and it helps you lower your bills so you can grow your savings. It lets you see all of your subscriptions listed right there in one place. When you see a subscription you're paying for but you don't want, do you really want to spend an hour on the phone trying to track down some customer service agent to cancel it? Rocket Money can help you get rid of it with just a few taps. They also give me this great dashboard so I can see what I've spent this month compared to last month. And they'll even try to negotiate lower bills for me by up to 20%, so I'm spending less and saving more. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has saved a total of $500 million in canceled subscriptions, saving members up to $740 a year when using all the app's features.
Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/whatwas. That's rocketmoney.com/whatwas. rocketmoney.com/whatwas.
And that's what started happening. And then, you know, back then, She's a Homewrecker was actually owned by a different, had a different owner. So, and it was a little bit of different format where you could see comments. People still can comment there, but it was more user-friendly, I think, at the time, if you can call it that, user-friendly. But that's where my family and friends went there and said, you need to take this down. But I also got to see what people were saying at the, under this story. The comments were quite awful. I always knew that there are people out there that are just mean to other people, but I just didn't know the amount of that bad out there. I didn't know that people, once they hide behind the computer screen, I knew that there's some people that have issues in their life and they'll go and they'll be mean online, but I just didn't realize the amount of people that are doing that. And the comments were so nasty. And, you know, my daughter chimed in and saying, you know, this is my mother, no way, you know, family, friends. And some people are like, hey, listen, even if the most of the story is not true, if there's a smoke, there must be fire. And I'm like, no, there is no smoke. There's no fire. This never happened. But I knew it's going to start hitting my business. And a few days into it, because this was Friday when it happened. So then I had Saturday and Sunday trying to take care of it. And by the end of the weekend, I knew this. I had no clue where to go with it.
When all this was happening in the beginning, did you have any suspicions at all about who might actually have done this?
So this happened on Friday. So we spent the whole Friday, as I told you, kind of trying to figure out how we can stop this firestorm that just started. the next couple of days, we'll really just try to figure out who that could be. And my first, very first guess was that it was probably somebody in my industry. As you know, in real estate, you're usually on the opposite sides of a transaction. Sometimes there's issues and you end up, you know, fighting for your clients. And as much as I might get in a conflict with somebody at the end of it, when it closes and everybody is happy, go for, you know, it was very nice working with you. Hopefully we'll do it again. But, you know, not everybody can let go of a conflict, you know, or understand that this is really a job you do for your client. It's not, you know, it's not personal. So my biggest guess was, okay, I must have really pissed somebody off, like really bad. So I ended up looking, and I'm one of those people that hoards the emails for like ever and ever. I have every email I've ever written, you know. So I thought, well, that's a great opportunity for me to look through the emails and try to match up, you know, the timeline when, let's say, I potentially had a conflict, you know, something that actually pops in my mind, and maybe I got in a fight with somebody. And what I mean in a fight, like there was a one example I had where I was just really better at writing contract than the other person, and it cost commission to that agent. But, you know, my job was protect my clients, get their money back. So, you know, I thought, well, if he had to pay that up, and was quite a few thousands of dollars, maybe he's now after me. But I looked at the timeline of it when that happened, and I'm going, it just doesn't match up. It just doesn't match up. So we looked at everybody around us. And when I say everybody, I mean everybody. We're like, even like I remember sitting out on the deck and I'm going, you don't think kids did it, do you? You know, but you know, but no, but it's funny how your mind works. And I'm like, well, you know, my daughter is a pretty strong-headed person. She's very opinionated. And I thought maybe she just wrote something and she thought she could take it down, and she can't. But we're like, nah, that's not going to happen, you know. But if there ever was a case, then we probably would have dealt with it within our family. You know, we obviously wouldn't sue our kid. But no, there was really no reason for it. Our children very much love coming home and spending time with us, and we really don't have conflicts. I mean, we'll argue, like, just like any other family, but we know they love us. So we went through the emails, and I thought, okay, not family, not friends. There's, you know, a couple times where, because at this point, everybody got a message on Facebook, there's a couple people that would call more often than others being concerned, saying, okay, where are you at? What's happening? And I'm going, uh-oh, maybe what they're doing, they're not really concerned for me. They're just trying to find out where I'm at in the process, or do I know, or excuse me, or do I suspect? And so all of a sudden, your mind is suspicious of everything. But I was pretty much sure it must be related to my job, to the real estate world. You know, my husband sometimes at work has conflicts as well, but he thought maybe one person he was suspicious of. But, you know, the whole idea behind it is you don't know who did it. You can take a guess, but you're walking around looking at everybody, walking into the office and looking at all your colleagues and going, was it you? Maybe it's not because of conflict. Maybe because somebody was jealous. You know, we have a great right there that year. We had this huge party, and, you know, and everybody celebrated with us. We have a great family. You know, I'm at this point successful in real estate. My husband is successful in his career. Maybe some people just do it because they're jealous. I just didn't know. So we thought, since we can't take this down ourselves, I think we need to find out, how do we go after this website? How do we find out who did that? Who wrote that? Was it a website that just picked me randomly? Maybe it's not even somebody. Maybe those websites, they just generate content.
So at this point, you have to find an attorney, but this seems like it would be kind of a specialized area of law. How do you decide who to use to represent you to solve this thing?
We actually didn't know who to use. If you actually go and search, finding attorneys trying to clean your reputation or slander or any of that sort, and taking on a huge website like that, there's, at least in our area, that wasn't such a thing. So we talked to a couple of attorneys and they were like, yeah, not touching it. This is how we found out about Section 230 of Communication Act of 1996 that protects those websites. And they said, how the hell am I going to sue this website? It's impossible. And I said, well, can you at least sue him to tell me who did it? I got to figure out who did this. What if I'm like talking to this person every day and I don't know? In any case, so we finally get this guy and met him at our office, my office, and he said, okay, fine. And he was a patent attorney. He like, you know, did cases for patents. I said, will you take us on? And he goes, you know, I'm just crazy enough to try to do this. So he was.
That doesn't sound like it inspires a lot of confidence.
No, but you know,
sure, let's give it a try. What do we got to lose, right?
Let's figure this out. So we really, for the next couple months, we really worked hard on trying to figure out what is there in the law that we can actually file a lawsuit. Because just to say that, okay, this website slandered me and they're protected by Section 230, that doesn't get us anywhere. And think about it this way. The website's server is actually in a different state. If I go to a state court and we send an order to them or subpoena in a different state, they don't have to comply. So we figure out our only option would be to go to federal court. The blessing in disguise, when you look back at it, is that that person used my professional photo. I own a copyright to that photo. Because if she used something off of Facebook, good luck to me, right? So she actually used my professional photo. And because I own copyright, we were able to basically sue at that point John Doe or Jane Doe, because we didn't know who that was, for copyright infringement. And so there's few things we filed the lawsuit with. It was a copyright infringement. It was slander. It was interference with business, emotional distress. And we'll talk about it, but there was a lot of emotional distress with this whole case. And we filed. And as soon as we filed, we found out we're blazing a trail here. You know, when we first talked to the attorney, I said, okay, give me the worst case scenario. How much is this going to cost me? And he said, it's going to be somewhere between $35,000 to $95,000, depending how quickly we can go through it. And I'm like, $35,000 is bad enough. $95,000? That's like a house for some people. That's a house. And I cried and I thought, okay, let's just hope it's somewhere like closer to the 35 than the 95, right? I mean, let's just be hopeful. But I got to find out, you know, there is a value to your sanity. You know, I think I'm a person that always had a very kind of underlying, ongoing little bit of a depression. You know, I had some, you know, mental illnesses in my family. And I think I always had that low-grade depression throughout my whole life, but I was always okay with it. Not bad enough to take pills, but that thing put me in a downward spiral. I ended up actually, after we filed the lawsuit and trying to deal with comments online, because as soon as the lawsuit was filed, then the news started calling. And I didn't know if I wanted to be on the news. Because I'm like, oh my God, now it's just everybody's going to point a finger at me. But realizing how bad my reputation was online, I thought, well, maybe now I get to speak. Maybe now my voice will be heard. So I wanted to really, you know, I'm like, okay, let's just do it. Because it was first case of its kind filed over here. And I thought, okay, maybe somebody will know something. Maybe this person who wrote it told somebody and that person will turn them in. Maybe this is going to be positive. And maybe now there's going to be something that is contrary to the story online, something that tells people this is not true. So we decided to do an interview with the local news station. And that was the first story they ran. And it's starting to kind of push the content on the search results down, but not enough. You know, it was still there. We went from there. In the meantime, I'm struggling emotionally. I'm struggling financially at this point because my business went down It was just immediate. You know, I had a lot of listings. They dropped off and people were always like, well, you know, we just decided not to sell right now. You know, I live in the area that is very conservative and this is a huge no-no. And people don't know if it's true or not. They just go, well, just in case, I don't want to have anything to do with a person like that. I ended up, I was not doing well at all. So I ended up actually reaching out for some help. You know, I'm like, okay, now I'm really depressed. Okay, this is never going to go away. And I think that was my biggest surprise, that it was just trying to fix this was taking so long. You know, you file the lawsuit in the courthouse and in court, and you think they're going to take immediate action, but they don't. You wait months and months and months for one word from court. It was almost a year since this happened, and I decided, that's it. I need to go get some help. This is, I'm just not handling this well and, you know, any longer. And, you know, I had many days where I probably drank way too much wine, but, you know, I feel good afterwards. But, you know, I was also now experiencing not just the shame, the depression. I was now experiencing anger, and I was becoming a really angry person. When you get angry, you know, who do you bite at? You bite at the people that are closest to you. Now you have, I'm sorry, I know it's been a long time, but I look back at my behavior at that point, kind of biting back at anything that's close to me and not being a nice person. And I feel bad because I feel like it's not just me that's hurt in this. It's my whole family that's hurt. And instead of just, you know, and we stuck together, don't get me wrong. I mean, my husband supported me throughout the whole ordeal, but I put him through somehow. You know, I'd have too much to drink and bite back. So that was a really downturn for me. And so I decided to reach out for help and some help for my depression at that point. So actually I was in the office, psychiatrist's office, because obviously I needed medication to just kind of get out of this down, you know, this hall I was in. So I was actually at his office in the waiting room where I received a phone call from that news anchor saying that the person that wrote this about me just called her. I said, what? She says, I know her name. And I thought I was going to just pass out. I'm like, are you serious? Who is it? Do I know her? So she gives me the name and I'm like, I don't know who that is. Who is this person? And I was flabbergasted. Here I am sitting finally at the psychiatrist's office trying to get some help. And that's the day I get the answer to my question. But that opened up a whole new set of questions. What happened? Why? Well, I found out why. Her name was Molly Rosenblum. Molly Rosenblum was, at the time that she wrote that about me, was a meth addict and drug dealer. She was charged with kidnapping, assault. She was facing 20 years in prison. So what happened was that there was an article. So think about it this way. I found out about this. This hit online in 2015. She actually wrote that in 2014. It just sat in a deleted post folder on that website that whole year, because the original owner of the website did not believe her story. So she put it in a not true folder, or don't believe it, or whatever she named it. So she put it in there. And then 2015, that website changed ownership and they did a full release on all those files. And that's how that story hit.
So when you saw that story go live on the She's a Homewrecker website, Molly Rosenblum had actually submitted that story to the website a whole year before?
That's right. She actually called the news anchor and said, oh my God, yeah, I wrote that about that lady. I completely closed the computer, forgot about her. Jesus, that was like a year ago. And once we actually subpoenaed that website and we saw the timeline, we knew she submitted that in July of, I think it was July 2014. The story didn't hit until September 2015. And it's because of the ownership change.
And this all started because of a post that a local news station had on their Facebook page about a teenage girl visiting Auschwitz.
Yes.
Can you tell what was that?
So they actually had a news article. It was a big story. There was a teenager in Alabama that went to visit Auschwitz, and she took a selfie, and she was smiling in the selfie. And as everybody knows now, there's a bunch of keyboard warriors out there. They don't look at the surrounding story or the content of the picture. They just go, "Oh my gosh, she's at Auschwitz and she's smiling." Now, you know, as I've said before, I'm originally from Poland. I've been to Auschwitz now, I think 5-6 times, between taking my kids and my husband and friends. And I know exactly where she's standing. It's almost like a reception area, right? So, and the background story was that her father was a huge World War II buff. They both were. And they always wanted to go visit all these significant places. Well, her father died from cancer, so she completed the trip herself. And my understanding was she's standing there with the selfie, basically taking a selfie saying, "Hey, Dad, I made it." You know, and she was a teenager. She was 18 years old, and I've raised teenagers. And yes, this should have never actually gone public, but I understood what she did. At the same time, the fact that she posted on social media at 18 and not thinking through, not many teenagers think about a lot of things. Okay, so I've raised two. So I know they do really stupid stuff. So under that, obviously in the comment section under the story, Molly was commenting saying, "This is Amber Place, this teenager, she's this," and she called her every name in the book. And I'm going, she's 18 years old. So I wrote and I said, "Hey, listen, in so many words, teenagers do really stupid stuff. There's no need to be calling her all these names." And then, of course, she repeated, "It's like, you have Jewish descent. You have no clue." And I'm like, you know what? Auschwitz doesn't belong just to Jewish people. It belongs to everybody who died in it. I've been there. There's this saying about, let's not forget about what this is, you know, to remember so it can never be repeated. It's written in 17 languages. Auschwitz belongs to the whole world. So nobody can ever forget. If anybody can understand how bad it was, is the history. This is history of my country. Nobody ever thinks that this is not a somber place. Of course it is. So in any case, I argued with her.
I'll confess, sometimes I let my podcast playlist get out of hand and I get way behind. But there's one show that I subscribe to and any new episode goes right to the top of the queue. That's the Jordan Harbinger Show. That's because I never have to figure out, okay, is this one going to be interesting or do I wait for the next one like I do for some shows? Because Jordan's conversations are always a must listen for me. He talks to fascinating people from any category you can think of. Authors, scientists, athletes, you name it. He's talked to undercover cops who posed as mafia and the actual career mafia hitmen. And the stories he gets out of these people, just incredible. In one episode, he talked to Paul Holes. You might know that name if you're into true crime. He's the former investigator who uses really advanced methods to solve cold cases, including the Golden State Killer. And another one I really enjoyed was with Sam Harris, an author and neuroscientist who promotes skepticism, and he doesn't mind taking on some seriously controversial topics like politics or religion. That one's going to make you think. Whenever a new episode of the Jordan Harbinger Show pops up, I already know it's going to be an episode that I'll enjoy listening to, and I'll bet you will too. For some episode recommendations, check out jordanharbinger.com/start. Or search for the Jordan Harbinger Show. That's H-A-R-B as in boy, I-N as in Nancy, G-E-R, on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Hey, this is Scott. Did you know we offer a premium feed of this show that is completely ad-free and there are bonus episodes? Go to whatwasthatlike.com/plus or just click the link in the show notes of any episode to learn more and to sign up.
If you're listening on Apple Podcasts, you can sign up right there in the app by clicking Try Free at the top of the episode list. And I hope to see you in the premium feed soon.
Well, she didn't take that very well. She says, oh yeah, that bitch, I'm going to let her have it. She went that night. She researched, you know, it's not that hard to find me online. You know, I mean, I'm a realtor. My business depends on me being visible online. She found out where I work, pulled up my pictures, all my contact information. She said that night, within a couple hours, she wrote it and she forgot all about it. And that's how she started all of this.
A conflict in some comments about a Facebook picture.
Exactly.
That's just incredible. This part of the story is kind of amazing to me. The person that posted it on the RE/MAX Facebook page was Ryan Baxter.
Correct.
And obviously, he's not Molly Rosenblum.
No.
And I didn't realize this, but for some people, this is kind of a hobby to find these stories that destroy people and then exacerbate it. So Ryan Baxter is the one that posted on RE/MAX page and sent it to all your friends and did a lot more damage than what the original post did.
Yes. Ryan Baxter actually is Hannah Lupien. It's been a few years, but at the time she was a 20-some-year-old, I think 23, 24-year-old girl in California. And I don't know if she's been scorned, but Ryan, let's just go ahead and call it Ryan Baxter. We noticed a pattern because obviously I was spending hours and hours and hours on the computer trying to figure this whole thing out and see this part of internet. And what I noticed is when I started searching the name, I could see every single post Ryan Baxter did. And that seemed to be the hobby. Ryan Baxter would take that story and then go tell family and friends, send it to their work, trying to destroy their lives and their livelihoods. And that was repeated pattern for that kind of person. And there's a lot of them on there.
And this is someone who, Ryan Baxter, wasn't even involved, never even had a conflict with you.
Never crossed paths with me at all. Never crossed paths with Molly Rosenblum. Completely separate third person. It's a complete vigilante, and there's a lot of them out there. Because later on, I wanted to see how She's a Homewrecker works, so I would actually go there under false name and just to kind of see and follow that person, see what this person is writing. And that was a repeated pattern. He went after, there was a judge in another state. It's just, and look, maybe judge has some money to fight such a thing. But for little people, this is impossible to fight. It's impossible to fight. But yeah, definitely an online vigilante. And, you know, he literally wrote to my husband and in the message, it said, look, you Lou, see what your wife is doing and send the link. You know, and let's just say, you know, just the weird idea. We've never had infidelity in our life, but in our marriage. But what if we did? What if we went through a really bad time in our life and got over it? And you know, we're a happy family now. Something like this might have my husband questions like, oh my God, did she do it again? And it can completely break up a family.
So you're in your psychiatrist's office and you get the name. Where do you go from there?
You know, the first thing was, because her last name is Rosenblum, we actually have a real estate company here with that name. And I thought, I knew it. <You know? laughs> I knew it. It's a realtor, you know. So, but as I'm talking to the news anchor, she's like, not related, even spelled different. I'm like, okay. So who is this person? And she goes, I guess she said you wrote something about her or to her on Facebook. And I actually at that time didn't know what it was, but you know, thankfully Facebook keeps it all, right? So as I scrolled back to when that happened, all of a sudden the name pops up and I saw that article by the local news and all the exchange I had with her. And I'm like, son of a gun, are you serious? That's what this is about. So we right away, then we changed that. And we have, of course, now we had the name. So they were trying to depose her. And we were basically suing for damages because at that point, think when we calculated, my loss in business at that point was like $235,000. It was just enormous. Maybe even longer. I can't even remember the figure at this point, but it was quite an amount. And now we're talking, it's a year. So in any case, my attorneys contacted her right away. And at that point, I actually had a second attorney, an attorney that has had dealt with something like that in a different state. So now I had two attorneys, and he was such a pit bull. He was not nice. So when he wrote to her saying, okay, that's it, this is what you're getting sued for, and she got served, she completely freaked out. So now at that point, she writes him an email and says, if you're going to sue me, unless you drop this lawsuit, I'm going to double down and I'm going to do even more damage to her. So she did. She actually went online under one of the articles about this whole lawsuit and wrote that, okay, fine, I lied about Monica being a homewrecker, but I got to tell you people, she's neo-Nazi. She's the worst neo-Nazi in our area. And I'm like, you got to be kidding. She hates Jewish people. I thought I was going to have a heart attack. I'm like, that's even worse. You know, that's even worse. So she doubled down. And no matter what we did, she was just mean.
Well, but you have to know, the little that you know about this woman at that time is that she doesn't make good decisions.
Right. Especially being high. Yeah. But I didn't know. She said that she was drugged up. To the news anchor, she did say that she was drugged up when she wrote it. But I didn't know if that's something, something she continued with. I did read a few articles about her charges on kidnapping. I guess it was just a drug war. I guess that's what you can call it. Somebody stole money, drug money from her. She caught the guy, tied him up to a chair, beat him for 8 hours. He ended up escaping, running around, bloody, in town, half naked. And so she got charged with an assault. So she was facing 20 years in prison. So I'm like, okay, well, that's a really scary person. To me, that was a very scary person. So we went for months and months back and forth. She promised she's going to come and do deposition, never showed up, cost me a bunch of money, more money. And you have to understand that when you get into a lawsuit, people think, okay, we just filed, just sits there and doesn't cost you money. But it does. So think like, for example, every subpoena cost me $495. But just now imagine how many subpoenas you have to write. So you write to this website and you say, okay, I want a subpoena for this. I want to know the IP address of this person. Oh, first, hey, you have to give me information on that person. So you subpoena that. Then you go from there. You go to the service provider, another subpoena. And it's just multitudes of subpoenas. And then you do the same for Ryan Baxter. So then you get subpoena for this website, subpoena for that website, for Facebook. So we were provided actually with her actual submission, what she submitted to the She's a Homewrecker. They only posted one picture, and it happened to be the professional picture, which got me into court. But she actually pulled stuff off of my Facebook. So I could see the other three pictures she had ready to go over there. And then they gave me the IP address. It gave me the date. And that's how I knew this was way back in July of 2014. So they capture actually all of that. And a side note, this is why they do it. So if for example, and I tested this myself, believe it or not. So I thought, well, they say that you're anonymous on that website. Well, you're anonymous. How does this website prove to you that they didn't write it? They have to be capturing something, right? So I tested that. I said, okay, I can bet you they're capturing the IP addresses. They have to say, okay, this came from this place. So I went ahead and got one of those Tor browsers, right, which hides your IP address. And I went on the website through the Tor browser, and they wouldn't let me in. Because he couldn't capture the IP address. So I called my attorney. I said, they're lying. They have it. They have it because they were not trying to give us any information at first.
You're kind of a hacker, huh?
you learn. I'm like, okay, now I'm figuring this out.
Well, yeah, not many people know about the Tor browser. That's interesting.
Well, I mean, that's, I've read all about it. It's like, you know, how would people hide it? And would that website do it? And I think I probably read it somewhere. So I tested it myself. And sure enough, wouldn't let me in. You go on a regular browser, captures your IP address, boom, they can prove that they have not provided that content, because that's what it is with Section 230 of Communication Act. If you are not the author of that piece, then you're not responsible. So we knew they had all the information. And I just, you know, I was looking, I was actually seeing what's happening is that no matter what we do, no matter which way we go with court, how much money I'm spending, I'm not getting anywhere. I mean, eventually I'm going to get somewhere, right? I mean, there has to be a decision from court. But now at this point, we're going on almost 2 years and we just keep on bleeding money. And there's only so much money. Where, I mean, we had savings. You know, we've been married for 25 years. So at that point, we had some savings. But now we're depleting everything. And, you know, that's another guilt trip that I had. Now I knew that I caused that. I made that comment. I put it on a Facebook. It's my fault. I put my family through this. And now I'm depleting our savings. It's my fault. You go through all kinds of range of emotions. It's just really difficult. But, you know, I got to the point where I thought, you know, they're not getting anywhere. Every time that, because that's attorney's job, right? I mean, they're going to pound that person. You know, you hurt my client. So, you know, I'm not going to be nice to you, obviously. And I thought, well, they're not getting anywhere. I'm just bleeding money. So I decided I'm going to contact her. Maybe she'll talk to me. Maybe she can explain to me, I mean, why? So I contacted her through Facebook Messenger. And I said, hey, Molly, I don't know what it is that you want from me. You're doubling down. Now you're writing more lies about me. Why don't we meet? Ask me anything you want to ask me, because you actually don't know me. And she agreed. So we ended up meeting.
How did you arrange that?
Well, I definitely said I want it in a public place. And she actually wanted public place too. You know, it's funny how you have two people on opposite ends, and she's afraid of me and I'm afraid of her, right? So like public place. And I guess she doesn't like to drive. So I had to go to the town where she lives, which is about 45 minutes from my house. And we ended up meeting in a restaurant. It was like 10 o'clock in the morning. And of course, my husband parked in his car across the street just in case something goes wrong. And I guess she had her boyfriend or somebody waiting on the opposite end somewhere, you know. So anyway, but I walked in and I already knew what she looks like because I looked her up on Facebook. You know, you couldn't put, I guess, two more opposite looking people across a table, but that doesn't matter. And people have different looks. It doesn't, you know, bother me. I mean, I guess what bothered me was she had a tattoo of hammer and sickle on her forearm. And, you know, I grew up in communist country. And, you know, that was like, oh, yeah, okay. But hey, that's what you believe. That's what you believe. Yeah, as far as I'm concerned, you can believe anything you want as long as you're not hurting other people, right?
When you first saw her at that restaurant, or were you first, you know, you walked up to each other, what was that exchange like?
Well, she kind of looked at me, put her eyes down. I said, hi. And she says, hi. And I just sat down. We kind of sat there for a second in silence. And she just looked at me. She says, so you're a Nazi. I said, no, I'm not. I said, why would you ever say that? She said, well, you grew up in Poland. You all killed Jews. And I'm like, what? I said, Molly, I grew up in Poland. Polish people hid Jewish people, died for Jewish people. Polish people died in concentration camp. As you do know that, right? You do know that Auschwitz was actually created for political, Polish political and religious leaders. That's how Auschwitz started. And they just worked really well. So they moved on to all the other stuff they did. So, you know, there was an exchange. And I started telling her how I grew up. I saw her tattoo. So I said, now I can say you're communist because you have this tattoo. why you believe in that system. So then I start telling her what communism really looks like, because I grew up, I experienced 15 years of it. So we started kind of exchanging, then we started talking history, and it kind of, you know, the mood kind of settled, you know, it's kind of like now we're just talking, getting to know each other. She's actually a really articulate person, very well-spoken, has enormous amount of knowledge. She reads a lot of books, and I actually felt really bad for the way her life, what kind of turn it took. She grew up in an abusive home, and I don't know, I don't want to disclose all the details that happened to her that she told me, because that's her business. But she had a quite tough life. And then, you know, she had a husband who basically blew his brains out in the front of her, committed suicide in front of her, and she turned to drugs. And they just took such a wrong turn, and it put her on that path. And I just, you know, I felt, it's weird, sounds, I felt bad for her. You know, here I am sitting, the one that's in deep crap right now, but I'm feeling sorry for her. But, you know, I think if anything, it softened me. It made me, I started to getting my answers why. You know, a person who's high doesn't remember half of what she did. It's not an excuse, but at least it shows me, okay, this was not somebody who's just a sober, normal person that comes out with a smile, you know, to your face and then goes, jabs you in the back, right?
Right. Yeah, exactly. And I should mention, I reached out to Molly Rosenblum to get comments to see if she had anything to, mm-hmm. as far as input as for this story. And I have not heard anything back from her.
That's because Molly's in prison.
She's still in prison now?
Molly's release date is 2032.
Oh, boy. Okay.
What happened was, so Molly was actually, you know, during that time, and we're talking, you know, last 3 years, she was working out a deal with, she actually, you know, the time I met her, she was actually off of meth. She was on methadone. She was trying to clean her life up. She knew she was at least facing some time, you know, but she was cutting a really good deal with the prosecutor. She was facing 20, but at that point, they were cutting her deal like down to 2-4 years, something like that. But she knew that she couldn't do cold turkey in prison. So she decided to get clean herself first with methadone, with help, before she faces the short time in prison. And then what ended up happening is she lapsed, got on meth, and actually stabbed somebody, boyfriend, I believe. And she was high again. And that deal just went poof. And she got the 20.
So what was the outcome of your meeting with her?
So, you know, we talked for 4 hours, actually. Really long time. My husband's like, are you alive in there? So, you know, at the end of it, she actually apologized to me. She says, you know, if I knew what kind of person you were at the time that I had this exchange with you, I would have never written that. And I think that's a really great lesson for people. The written word is not, you don't, there's no emotion attached to it. You actually don't exactly know what the person means. So she apologized to me. She said she was very, very sorry, not only what she put me through, but also my family, my kids. And she mostly felt horrible about the fact that I had to lay off a couple of people. I just had to let them go. I just didn't have that income. She says, is there anything I can do? And she says, I'm going to take all of this off from online. She says, I'm going to delete every single thing I wrote. She said to me, she's going to take everything, every single comment she made, every story she wrote, she's going to take it offline. And, you know, I'm standing there and saying, thank you. And I already know she can't. Even though you're the author of the story, you can't take it down. I think that's another thing that should change. If the story is not valid anymore, or if you really truly lied, you should be able to say, listen, I lied. Can I please take this down? But you can't do it. So I already knew she couldn't. But I did tell her, I said, Molly, here's what you can do for me. Instead of continuously paying attorneys and the court and going back and forth, if you provide me with affidavit actually telling the court that you lied, it will probably cut out 9 months of legal battle for me, and it will save me money. And she agreed to do it. So my attorneys prepared the affidavit. And I have to tell you, when I told them I'm going to meet with her, oh my gosh, whole hell broke loose. I mean, I thought they're going
to. They didn't want you to do that, huh?
No. Why would you do that? Don't do that. And I'm like, no, you've tried everything you can do. And maybe if she just gets to know me, I'm a really nice person. It's like, maybe she'll like me. Maybe she'll hate me. I don't know. But, you know, might as well give it a try. But they were, oh my gosh, I got yelled at. It's like, if you mess this up, I'm going to fire you. I'm like, okay. So she actually ended up meeting with me, I think it was like a few days later, once I had the affidavit where she admitted to everything, and actually went to the bank with her because of notary public. We had to have notary public, and she signed it all off. And I remember driving back from that bank when she did it all. And I think that was the first time that I could see the light at the end of the tunnel, not only because she signed off on it, but because now she knew me. Now I knew that I don't have to fear her as much, you know, that she's going to write something, or that she understood who I was. And I'm not saying that if she doesn't get high, she's not going to remember, get angry at me and do it all over again. I don't know. But I was kind of hoping this is going to be the end of it, at least from her side. So I started to see the end of the tunnel. And so we did that. And then submitted all to court, and it took another 9 months before we got the answer from court. And the court not only gave me, not only did I win on every single count, the actual opinion of the judge, it was a female judge, was kind of, it made me feel really good, because she did say how much I suffered, how outrageous this was, you know, so it's a confirmation for me. And, you know, at this point, I got this federal order, and some other people, once the lawsuit went through and I won, there were some other people from news contacted me. They did the update on it, you know, including the local news people, because I wanted people to know this is confirmation. Yes, it took me over 3 years to do it, but I was innocent. So there was no smoke and there was no fire.
And of course, all of that, you want it to be all public, because every news report, that's another entry in Google for when somebody does a search, right?
Yeah. One of the reasons was also so important is because here we go to another stage of it. Now I have this federal court order that says not only I've been awarded damages, but now I have this court order that says, hey, Google and all the search engines, de-index this. And I find out the answer from Google was, in so many words, I'm paraphrasing, well, we're going to take a look at it and see if we accept this federal court order or not. We had too many fake requests come through, so we don't promise we're going to do it. And I am still at standstill. This has not been acknowledged by Google yet. They're literally not listening. They're powerful enough. They're not listening to court orders. So at this point, I know, look, that the story still lives online. You know, it's still out there. I mean, if you search enough, you'll find it. Some people still look at it. She's a home record. The story on the actual website is not there anymore. Instead of it, there's a legal notice from my attorneys that's been replaced. They took that down. But it didn't matter, because it's syndicated to such a nasty, nasty website. And there's, oh my God, there's this one story out there, I think in something like don'tdatemyex.com. It's something, some weird website like that. And that one actually didn't even have, except for a link, somebody wrote a whole new story about how this was this person that I supposedly had sex with. And I'm going to prove to you that I really did have sex with her. She has this mark on here and that, and talking about genitalia and all. It just, you know, I got to about one third of it. And I looked at my husband and I said, I can't even read it. I can't even read it. It's just awful. Just awful. Very, very graphic. So, you know, those stories are out there. But I think a lot of positive content since have pushed all of it down. you know, and I'm really grateful for that, especially that you have these huge search engines, those huge corporations like Google. They're just not helpful. They're just way too powerful.
And I know there was the one site that where it was viewed so many times called Bad Biz Report. Mm-hmm. They ignored the court order as well. But it looks like when I did some research, that whole site is down now, apparently.
It is?
No, I couldn't find it.
Oh, I'll have to look. I mean, I think it's been a few months since I looked. You know, these are the people that claimed their actual thing. It said the little introduction to the website. It said, "American lawyers make us laugh." It's just they're like, "You were never gonna take this down. Good luck to you." And that's pretty much an attitude of majority of these websites. But if they're down, I would be very happy. I know that they had that website for sale for a while, and I know their servers are outside the United States. So there's no even way for me to do anything about it. But I knew they said that they would accept an offer to purchase. I'm like, man, if I can just raise enough money to purchase it and shut it down, that would be really wonderful. Hopefully the word is spreading and people start canceling in our cancel culture these days, right? Once you cancel people like that, they're literally parasites. And they're parasites because they feed and make money from ruining people's lives.
And it looks like there's no way out. There's no solution.
That's right. Because it's so overwhelming. I mean, you know, and if you're the person all by yourself, and let's say you have mental issues or emotional issues, and it puts you in that hole, I can bet you they're suicides. I mean, At that point, I have heard from so many people, and not just from the United States, but from all over the world. I had, for example, one young lady. She has two children, and she was exposed. She was a teacher, and she was exposed on a website, something like "Watch out for the pedophile" or something like that. And she was named that she was a teacher. She was a pedophile. So, of course, you have vigilantes that then send this to her workplace, which is school, and you tell me if the school is going to try to figure out whether or not she actually did it. No, they're going to protect the kids. They just fired her. She couldn't find a job. And she says, "I think the world is better off without me." She says, "I am on the verge of just ending it all. I just can't do it anymore." And then now think about how is a teacher on a teacher's salary is going to go ahead and spend that amount of money. Justice, again, is not equal. Justice in this case, since this is not a criminal offense, there's only justice for those who have it, who have the money to go through with the lawsuit. You know, we wiped ourselves out, but we had it to begin with. For a teacher or single mom who's been slut-shamed and slandered online, and it was not true, there is no way. You can't even get started in this loss. You might as well, I mean, like I said, one subpoena is $495. Now you have an attorney and each is like $300-some an hour. There's no funds for people who don't have, there's no path for them to get their justice. No path.
At that point, I would think some people say, well, I'm just going to change my name, be a new person. Right?
I thought about that actually. You know, but then I got angry. I'm like, all I got is mine. It's my name. I'm not changing my name. Yeah, might as well just kill my business altogether. You know, it went down 50%, but I might as well just kill it all, because if I change my name, I just have to start over. And then I thought, no, this is my name. How many Monicas are out there? Right? At the very end of it, you know, we ended up, like I said, we ended up winning. We got awarded $219,000. I didn't qualify. My case did not qualify to get my attorney fees back or anything else that I spent. It was only the amount I lost in my business, which was the $219,000. But like you said, to begin with, if they have zero money, then you're not getting any money. I mean, I have the judgment and federal judgment you can't go bankrupt on. So this will hang over her head forever. Maybe someday she will win a lotto, but not until 2000, 2032, right? But in any case, I'm never going to see a penny from it. Since this happened, it's been 5 years. I have rebuilt my business at this point. I think that those stories online, the positive stories, definitely help just so that content goes down. I think a lot of people, I've had instances where I have a new client and we'll start laughing about something and they go, hey, so, you know, how are you deal with social media? And she says, I've heard that you had some keys going on. I said, oh, you Googled my name. Okay. So it comes up now, but it comes up more in because there's another story that they can refer to and say, oh, this lady won. So this was untrue. Now it's more, I don't want to say it's positive. It's probably the wrong word to use to say now it's more positive because the whole thing, obviously, that was a negative thing that happened to me. But because there's something to offset it, people look at it in more positive way, you know?
Yeah, they see the whole story rather than just that one initial thing. Yeah,
exactly.
Do you still comment on controversial Facebook posts?
I go back and forth, not controversial subjects. And I definitely, definitely think twice and think very hard about what I'm writing. On the opposite end, I get angry that I have to do that. Why can't I express my opinion? I have just as much right to First Amendment as anybody else out there. But I also, because of my lawsuit, understand the First Amendment comes, if you decide to use it, comes with consequences. I definitely don't want to find myself again in the situation. Would I do something different? Yes, I would not comment. I mean, that's all I can say. I would not comment. Do I regret it? Yes, I regret it. I do still want to be able to express my opinion. I do want to make comments under some news stories. But now I just try to stick to those better, especially in this environment today where everybody is so on the edge. I'm like, I just stay away from that.
It's definitely worse now than it was a few years ago.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. I still talk about it. And I'm going to say, yes, I want to protect everybody's First Amendment right. But please be careful. Please be careful, because what happened to me happens more often. It's just the only reason you know about me is because I fought it and I had the means to fight it. But 99% of people have no means to fight it. They're silent, silent victims that you'll never hear about, but there's tens of thousands of them.
One thing that What Was That Like listeners like to do is talk about the podcast with other listeners. And that's what happens in our private Facebook group. In fact, some of the guests who have told their story on this podcast are in that group as well. So you can join in those discussions, or you can just be a lurker if you want. Either way is okay. That's at whatwasthatlike.com/Facebook. And Raw Audio Episode 7 is now live. The Raw Audio episodes are bonus episodes that include actual 911 audio and the story about what happened on that call. In this episode, a live shooter at a restaurant.
He's still shooting. I'm hearing shots over the phone.
A worker at a recycling plant gets into trouble with a baler machine.
Are you there by yourself, sir?
No, sir, I'm not, but no one's hearing me. And I'm really losing blood, sir. I'm going to die.
And a crowd of people try to move a car that's stuck on the railroad track.
He's trapped in the vehicle.
Okay, then everybody else needs to get away from it if there's a train coming.
You can get access to Raw Audio 7 and all the previous and future bonus episodes by becoming a supporter of this podcast for just $5 a month. Sign up at whatwasthatlike.com/support. And I want to say a big thanks to all of you who completed the 2020 What Was That Like listener survey. You gave me a ton of great information and suggestions and a lot of compliments, which I really appreciate. In fact, one of the suggestions was to change the opener for the show. And maybe you noticed, this episode has a whole new opening sequence. Let me know what you think of that. And congratulations to Maria. She was one of the ones who completed the survey, and she won the drawing for the $50 Amazon gift card.
And now I'll leave you with true crime podcast host Nina Instead as she tells you about her show called Already Gone. And I'll see you again in 2 weeks.
Murder, missing persons, unsolved mysteries. Already Gone explores lesser-known cases from Michigan and the Great Lakes region. I'm Nina Instead, the voice behind the Already Gone podcast. Join me for an in-depth look at stories that will have you looking over your shoulder and locking the doors at night. Find Already Gone on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or your favorite podcatcher.